Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, March 20th. Today, Brian Eason talks with Sandra Fish about the state budget and why it's so tight in a strong economy. Before we begin, thanks for listening to the Daily Sunup from the Colorado Sun. Please take a moment to rate and review us in your podcast player. Tell us what you think of the show, share your ideas, and help us reach new listeners. Thank you. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this date in 1914, Alamosa learned of a landmark court ruling by Judge Charles Holbrook against public school segregation. Despite Colorado's constitutional ban on educational racial discrimination, Alamosa's school board segregated students with Spanish-sounding names, leading to a lawsuit by local Hispano families. One of the more egregious cases included Miguel Maestas, who was forced into a segregated school despite his fluency in English. Holbrook's ruling was one of the first against this type of segregation and mandated integration despite pervasive ethnic divisions across the state. Before we continue, do you live near Loveland and want to join our networking event? The Colorado Sun is hosting a free networking evening in partnership with the Loveland Arts Creative District and Artworks Center for Contemporary Art on March 27th. RSVP today. Space is limited. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click the Loveland event button. We hope to see you there. Next, our feature story.
Hey there, Daily Sunup listeners. This is Sandra Fish with the Colorado Sun's politics team, and I'm here with Brian Eason. He is our policy and finance reporter who listens to all this super complicated financial stuff and then makes it more easy for the rest of us normal people to understand. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
I'm great. So we're coming up on this crazy time here where it's sort of the big event that happens every year in which the state budget is about to be introduced in the House later this week. But lawmakers got some kind of bad news last week. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so once every quarter, economists with the governor's office and legislative staff, they'll release forecasts on how much tax revenue the state is going to collect, right? Well, the March ones came out last week, and these are the most important ones of the year because state lawmakers actually use them as the basis of the state budget for the next year. So now the good news is the state economy is still humming along. Wages are up, inflation's falling, lots of good things happening, right? The bad news is that the state government actually isn't going to be able to spend quite as much money as lawmakers thought because they don't have as much room underneath the state spending cap. So that's left the Joint Budget Committee trying to come up with around $170 million in cuts to things that they had hoped to fund next year.
You know, could you just talk briefly about why the budget seems so tight when the economy is good?
Yeah, so in Colorado, we're really limited in how much revenue we can spend every year, how many tax dollars. And that's because of Tabor. It puts a spending cap on how much your spending can increase every year, and that's based on inflation and population. Now, last year, massive, massive inflation, right? And so the state budget was able to grow quite a bit under the revenue cap. This year, inflation's been a little bit less, number one. And number two, population growth has been a little bit less than folks expect. And so we're in an environment where the state is trying to fully fund schools for the first time. They're trying to catch up on years and years of budget cuts to higher education. They're trying to fund employee raises at a time of high cost of living, all of these things. So all these things add up, and there's really just not a whole lot of wiggle room beneath that cap.
It's interesting because in Colorado, you have this 6-member committee, often referred to as the powerful Joint Budget Committee, that puts together the budget and then presents it to all the lawmakers. And they've been meeting for months, working on this, like almost daily since November. And can you talk about what some of the big themes are right now?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest takeaways this year is that there's been a real concerted effort from top lawmakers to address state worker shortages, right? There's a new union contract that I think went into effect last year. It calls for large pay raises this year. There's a new pay plan. So that's taking quite a bit of money. They've also pushed to increase reimbursement rates for Medicaid providers. Now, these aren't state employees. These are, you know, nurses and folks who work for private healthcare clinics. But the reimbursement rate that the state provides ends up paying for healthcare services, which translates into what these healthcare workers actually take home and pay. They're also looking to hire dozens of new public defenders this year. There's some healthcare workers that actually are employed by the state in prisons and state mental health hospitals, and they're facing massive staffing challenges as well, much like much of the healthcare sector. So in addition to, you know, the state employee pay raises, they're also looking at some signing bonuses to try and fill these kind of really hard to fill positions.
That is fascinating. You know, the state worker shortage in part because the economy has been relatively good. You know, what about education? That's another area that they're touting fully funding for the first time in eons. Talk more about that.
Yeah, so for the first time since the Great Recession, the budget does actually call for fully funding K-12 education. They're getting rid of the BS factor, and it's basically just this funding shortfall that they've had over the last decade or so. But interesting, lawmakers aren't really relying too much on state tax dollars to do so. You know, a lot of the increase is actually coming from rising property taxes, which end up funding school districts at the local level. Some of it will also come from the state education fund, but lawmakers are really trying to cut down on the amount that the state, hold level, I should say, the amount that the state is spending out of the general fund to fund schools this year. Higher education, that was one of the biggest disagreements between the governor's office and lawmakers on the JBC. Lawmakers on the budget panel wanted more money for colleges than the governor proposed. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so the JBC hasn't quite finalized the budget yet. But if they have, you can find the details at colorado.sun.com sometime this week.
The whole property tax thing, it's also interwoven, and property taxes mostly fund local things. And you did a great story on Monday that you should also SunUp listeners find at coloradosun.com, just explaining in context Colorado's property tax issues in the context of other states. And, you know, they're actually pretty low here. But people see their bills go up in a major way. And, you know, we have this bipartisan property tax commission that issued recommendations last week. And, you know, then you have outside the Capitol, conservatives and business groups are pushing for large access across the board tax cuts. You know, how will the budget figure into the property tax debate?
Yeah, so I think the fact that we do have such a tight budget year this year is really going to factor heavily into how much lawmakers are willing to do in terms of property tax cuts. And the reason for that is if you cut taxes, the state has to take on a higher share of K-12 funding. And that puts a lot of pressure on everything else, right? We talked earlier about kind of how they want to work on state worker pay, and they want to work on higher education and the judicial branch, environmental inspectors, and on and on and on. All of this stuff has to come out of the same pot. And anytime you're cutting property taxes, that does put indirect pressure on all of these other things, even though we don't typically think of the state as being involved in or collecting property taxes.
You know, this is really fascinating to me, and I love hearing you explain it. So we'll be looking forward to hearing when the budget comes out this week and what actually happens. And thanks so much for talking with us, Brian.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Hey, and SunUp listeners, you should really be subscribing to The Unaffiliated, our twice-weekly newsletter, where we include tons more info. Thanks for listening.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Nearly $86 million in federal funding will begin flowing into Colorado this spring to help small communities with the daunting task of removing so-called forever chemicals from their drinking water systems. The question is whether the money will go far enough to do all the necessary cleanup work. Dozens of small Colorado communities are scrambling to find ways to treat a group of chemicals known as PFAS, which are found in nonstick cookware, firefighting foam, waterproof clothing, cosmetics, and more. The federal dollars are reserved for what the government calls small and disadvantaged communities, which may lack resources for PFAS mitigation. Police groups are lining up against proposed reforms in Colorado and other states that would prohibit mention of excited delirium in many official proceedings. Excited delirium is a 40-year-old theory that has been used to explain how a person experiencing severe agitation can suddenly die while being restrained. The theory is frequently cited to quash police culpability for in-custody deaths. But last year, the American College of Emergency Physicians withdrew a 2009 report that offered key support for the theory. Colorado's bill proposing curbs on the use of the term by police and first responders passed the Senate on Monday and is under consideration by Governor Jared Polis. Colorado lawmakers say they want Congress to do its job and fund repairs for a deteriorating irrigation system in southwestern Colorado. The Pine River Indian Irrigation Project is one of 16 federal projects in the West that have fallen into disrepair. Addressing the extensive maintenance backlog could cost up to $2.3 billion. State legislators passed a resolution Friday calling on Congress to fully fund one key money pot. The federally managed Pine River Indian Irrigation Project includes about 175 miles of earthen ditches, metal head gates, and concrete diversion structures. About 400 water users rely on the system, including about 100 non-native farmers and ranchers. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. You know, that's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.